Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning. It's the 16th of June, 6:06 in the morning. My voice is a little bit shot. I started to get a little more sick. I went to the NAACP Juneteenth last night, which was interesting. And there was some speakers there, including Billy Garrett, who did not have his stuffed spotted owl on his shoulder last night. But interesting stuff. All right. So today I'm going to focus a lot on political violence. And I was doing some research before I came to the show. And I think that if you believe that what is occurring out there is accidental, I'm talking about the violence. If you think what is occurring out there is, it's not the better angels, it's not really who the left is, I think you got another thing coming. And the reason that I say that is because of my study in the history of leftism. Violence is always very important. Now, it may not be important to all leftists, and there may be some leftists who very proudly espouse nonviolence and pacifism, but as a movement, from the very beginning, Marxism has always espoused violence as a way to take over the world, basically. And so what we're seeing play out across the United States is some element of this. So I am not saying that it's going to go farther, although I think it could quite easily do so. I'm not saying that there's a civil war around the corner, but I think we need to be realistic about in the ideas of Marxism. It's in the ideas in Marxism, the idea of a class struggle. So it's a violent theory. The classes are in conflict with one another, and to reconcile that, to overcome it, to find peace, it's kind of like Islam. You find peace through war, you find peace through jihad, because you force your enemies to give you peace. So here is Dr. Gina Loudon: Why Are Liberals More Violent Than Conservatives? And let me check for you real quick for your headlines. Cosby, no verdict yet. Mueller leaking more. Mueller's obviously part of this movement to get rid of Trump, the way that the direction that he's going. That's my opinion. Nothing that anybody in the Democratic Party in the higher parts of the Democratic Party, nothing they do that would be damaging to Trump should surprise you, because they're unified on their desire that they believe that Trump has to be removed. Now, here's Dr. Gina Loudon, and this is from about almost exactly a year ago. Why are liberals more violent than conservatives?
All right, this type of violence against Donald Trump supporters, justified? That, according to a Huffington Post writer who just penned a stunning op-ed, Jesse Ben's piece titled this, "Sorry, Liberals, a violent response to Trump is as logical as any." Whatever your personal beliefs are regarding violent resistance, there's an inherent value in forestalling Trump's normalization. Violent resistance accomplishes this. Well, isn't that interesting? But how can anyone on the left or on the right justify that type of violence that we continue to see, especially in the West Coast? Here to weigh in is conservative talk show host and psychologist and behavioral expert, Dr. Gina Loudon. Dr. Loudon, you're somebody who knows about starting a movement that many people have a problem with, and that was the Tea Party. You see this violence happening, especially last week. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that it's a scary pivot, and I think that voters especially should take note. It's a scary pivot, Brian, that we've gone from a place where regressive leftists used to advocate government-imposed equality that really didn't work, and they've shifted now to actually advocating violence over just civil discourse, which is how we in America have traditionally handled our problems.
Right. I mean, for example, here's what this op-ed at the Huffington Post says. Here's an excerpt. Violence that takes place at Trump rallies in support of opposition is a reaction to the tone he set, and the blame for it should land primarily on his shoulders. Really?
Well, you know, it's interesting. He uses the excuse, this blogger does, that that Donald Trump and his supporters are fascists. He used the word fascism. And Brian, I think that's really interesting because the definition of fascism is actually a political system where government controls business and labor,
right,
and opposition is not permitted. Under this regime of Obama, with Hillary's help, we all know, we have seen unprecedented growth in the size of government. Just look at our $19 trillion debt. And Hillary wants to expand the size of government, controls
right
over businesses even further. What she is advocating is actually more closely aligned to the definition of fascism than anything that Donald Trump or his supporters are advocating.
Real quick, Dr. Loud, a lot of these guys, these people causing this havoc are the Sanders supporters. Is there something about socialism?
I do think there's a collectivist mentality that's very dangerous, Brian, that causes people to follow sort of like lemmings. And I think that, you know, when Hillary makes some suggestion that Donald Trump is going to be a dictator of some kind, they then rationalize in their mind behaving this way. It's not acceptable. It's not the American way. And people
right
need to call him out for it right now.
Right, on both sides. Let's just have people have rallies and stop with the violence. Dr. Gina Loudon,
right,
thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Or else it's going to be an unbelievably violent next 5 months. Coming up.
All right, here's an update from yesterday. Dan Bongino. Liberal philosophy spurs violence.
A member of House leadership there, Steve Scalise, who had a unit with him of two special agents. Nobody would have survived because essentially it would have been a massacre.
Yeah. Steve, this would have been the worst political assassination, political bloodbath in American history. And I don't use those terms lightly. Think about it. This was not New York City, where the, you know, where the Fox studio is, where there's a NYPD police officer, you know, 30 seconds away at any given moment.
Yeah.
I was a New York City cop. This was a relatively suburban area where the cops were probably 3 to 5 minutes away. Do you know the kind of damage you can do in 3 to 5 minutes when you're firing at unarmed people who don't have a firearm to protect themselves? Thank God, and I am not using the Lord's name, but I literally mean thank God that those brave United States Capitol Police officers, God bless their souls. They were there. One of them was actually hit and still reengaged. There is no doubt in my mind they saved the lives of innumerable members of Congress there. So, I mean, it would have been a really, really tragically more horrific
situation.
Dan,
they're not allowed to carry in D.C., but they don't have security detail. Unless you're a top-ranking official, you get security. But most of them don't have security, and they're not allowed to carry. So if they want to protect themselves, what are they supposed to do?
You know, Ainsley, I ran for Congress. I lost by 1 point. And when it's interesting because there was this period where there was a recount where we thought we had won the race. And, you know, one of the first things that jumped into my head was, thank God I have a carry permit from being a former Secret Service agent under this FLEOSA law, because that's the first thing that jumped in my head. How do these guys go to D.C. with no security detail in this hot political climate where they're essentially sitting ducks? The first thing my wife and I discussed was, that's insanity. Now, it didn't affect me because I had a carry permit, but this is an insane situation we have right now. It's crazy.
But we can't afford, you would think, to protect 535 members of Congress like we do leadership. So what do you do right now? One thing a lot of people will say is at town halls, not doing them, too much of a risk. Going outside in the public, now I'm not doing them, too much of a risk.
Yeah, you know, I think that may be.
All right, so I've got a little bit of something from Juan Williams here. The obvious move to make in this situation, and it's called moral equivalency. I step on your toe, you pull out a bazooka and blast me to kingdom come. That's the left's idea. The left is always looking, always claiming that if they've done anything, it was predicated on a response to the right. Here's Juan Williams.
Juan, do you think the call for civility and better discourse? How long will that last on the Democratic side?
I think it's very difficult in the age of Trump.
It's Trump's fault.
I think Trump has a great deal of responsibility here. And I mean, you know, just stop for a second and think about this argument. I mean, people are now somehow beating up on the left by attaching this guy to the left. And I think to myself arguments that we've been through with regard to, if you're pro-choice, that's, you know, a cult of murder and the like. That's very vicious language over a policy difference. People say, let's talk about policy.
You got to be kidding. This guy's nuts. I can't stand this type of debate. This is Juan Williams' specialty, blaming other people for stuff that his people did. And it's just going to – people like this who justify violence – there's no justification for violence to cross over that line, right?
A House bill, that it was a mean bill, that it would hurt people.
But it didn't say people would die.
This guy's such an idiot. I can't stand listening to him. All right, we'll take a little break here. I do apologize for my voice. I think my voice is probably a little better than it was a few days ago, but I'm a little bit sicker, so... Here's your Sultans of Swing, 617 Kelly O'Connell. We're going to get into the roots of violent leftism, and you're going to understand when we're done, it's not an accident. It's, as a matter of fact, inevitable. If leftism really unleashes itself, it's always violent. Be right back.
In the dark, it's raining in the park. Meantime, down off the river, you stop and you hold everything.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, I hope you feel better. You should have a hot cup of tea with some honey and lemon in it, maybe soften up your larynx a little.
Yeah, it's probably true. What's going on?
I was going to say, remember Obama made statements like, they bring a knife, we'll bring a gun to the fight.
Yeah.
Another thing is, look at how they went crazy in the streets, these liberals, and bashing windows and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy how they are.
Sickening, really.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that they've done that comes to mind, you know, that how...
Hey, Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Let me put you on hold so you can bring it on the air, okay?
Sure.
All right. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Tom.
Hey, Tom, I can barely hear you. But anyway, go ahead. You were talking about violence.
Yeah, the violence that they, even that they staged at the Trump rallies and things like that, they made sure that they videotaped it. And another thing with all the violence going on with the protesting Trump becoming president and throwing rocks through people's windows, store windows, and banks and whatnot.
And the play.
And then they blame us for being evil.
Well, I mean, and then the play, they've got a play they're running every day where Trump is beheaded or he's murdered or whatever. And the left is supporting this. So I mean, leftism and violence are inextricably linked in history.
And also I mentioned, too, where Obama was saying if they bring a knife to a fight, we're going to bring a gun. You know,
yeah, so too bad he didn't. Too bad he didn't bring a brain to the presidency, you know. Thanks a lot, Tom. All right, folks, and here is Die Whites Die. This is from about half a year ago. Anti-Trump rioters vandalize community and threaten violent government overthrow.
Will you investigate? Fox News starts now.
Noisy anti-Trump protests break out in cities across the country, including right here in New Orleans.
The angry demonstrations against Trump's victory are marked by loud chants of "Not my president," and some people sprayed graffiti, even smashing out a bank window in the Central Business District.
Good evening, I'm Lee Zurich.
And I'm Shelley Brown. Some say tonight's demonstrations serve as a stark reminder that the nation remains bitterly divided.
Rob Krieger joins us live to begin our coverage.
The protesters crowded Lee Circle this afternoon before marching through the CBD and into the French Quarter, protesting President-elect Donald Trump's victory and at times defacing and vandalizing statues and private property. Police surrounded the area in the 200 block of St. Charles, where someone busted out multiple windows at Place St. Charles. They were there investigating that situation. And then protesters filled the streets nearby, chanting various things like, "Not my president," and "No Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA," while New Orleans police blocked off streets to ensure the protesters were safe. Many of the protesters were holding signs for the cause, one even suggesting starting a coup. Some of the protesters say this isn't about politics, but instead human decency, saying in some regards they can't accept Trump's presidency as legitimate, at times arguing against the Electoral College. One protester who did not vote for president says protests like these are only the beginning.
And this is not the first time this happened, but I actually feel like it's going to be worse. It's not just going to be protesting. I feel like it's going to be actual bloodshed.
Some ways, you have to accept it, right? But this is what America's about, right? Having freedom of speech and having the right to protest and having the right to say, this isn't right. This isn't a democracy, what happened.
At some point in the evening, protesters tell me a small group of them spray-painted and vandalized Louisiana's tallest building, One Shell Square, writing derogatory words and claiming the system is broken. Now, crews were there quickly to clean up the spray paint this evening. Now, they say they will be back here tomorrow at 5 o'clock to continue protesting President-elect Donald Trump's victory at 5 o'clock right here in Lee Circle. Reporting live from Lee Circle, Rob Krieger, Fox 8 News.
So how can you claim that Donald Trump created this when before he got into office, the violence was already taking off? Here's a little bit more from Tucker.
Trump threw a reporter to the ground in Montana last night. Well, initial reports suggested that Greg Gianforte, he's a Republican running for an open house seat in the state, body slammed a reporter who tried to ask him a question at an event in Bozeman. A Fox News crew watched the whole thing happen. It was caught on audio tape.
You've been waiting to make your decision about health care until you saw the bill and it just came out.
And what, yeah, we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have
the action. Speak to Shane, please.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last time that came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing, you and the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
The last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Now, the man you just heard yelling was Gianforte. Authorities in Montana later charged him with misdemeanor assault. Open and shut case, right? Not by this morning. Despite the fact he was on an entirely different continent when the whole thing happened, Donald Trump somehow wound up the perpetrator in the retelling.
I don't think it's because a guy who's in office now has said very horrible things about reporters and has said that the reporters are the enemy of the American people.
No,
I think
God,
that has nothing to do with anything, that people feel that they can get away with it, because I don't believe that you actually believe that. There's no way you can't. There's no way you believe what you're saying if you don't think that's true.
There's so much hostility, frankly, to the press, a lot of it generated by, you know, the Donald Trump rallies, frankly, and a lot of my colleagues faced the blowback from that. So this is kind of an extension of that.
You can draw a straight line from Republican candidates thinking that sort of behavior is okay when you have Donald Trump berating reporters throughout the entire campaign.
Come on. Here's what's actually true. Violence in politics is totally unacceptable, period. Never allowed. What the candidate did last night, Gianforte, was wrong, and Republicans ought to denounce him, as many have. That said, let's not lie to ourselves, or more precisely, don't let the people in charge lie to us. America does face the threat of political violence. It does not come, by and large, from baby boomer evangelicals in Montana, nor does it come from President Trump, whatever his flaws. The threat today comes from the progressive left and its growing enthusiasm for force as a political tool. Here's an example. Do you remember Lauren Duca? She's a writer for Teen Vogue who appeared on the show just before Christmas and delivered a performance so mindless and nasty that I lost control and snapped at her. I shouldn't have done it, but I did. For that moment alone, though, Duca became a progressive hero. Within a month, she was the subject of a predictably fawning New York Times profile. Last weekend, she gave the commencement address at a university, Bard College in Simon's Rock in Massachusetts. Now, we're happy to meet people famous, even not very impressive 26-year-old bloggers like Lauren Duca. But you'd think someone on the Bard commencement committee would have actually read what Duca has written before hiring her. Maybe looked at her Twitter feed for a minute. It turns out when she's not barking on cable television or writing vapid pieces for teen magazines, Duca has yet another hobby, fantasizing about the deaths of her political enemies. Last week, Duca tweeted what she called, quote, a cute pic of Trump getting tired of winning. It showed an airplane going down in flames. Duca later bravely deleted the tweet, but fortunately, the internet never forgets. To one online critic, Duca wrote this, quote, I hope this person dies in a fire. What's civil discourse for you? So, of course, she gave the commencement address at an accredited four-year college. The left has gone insane. And if you don't believe it, check out what's been happening to non-liberal members of Congress lately. Last week, the FBI arrested a man for threatening Republican Congresswoman Martha McSally. Congresswoman Tom Garrett has received so many death threats, he now needs extra security when he does town hall meetings. Congressman David Kustoff literally was chased by a woman in her vehicle. Of course, there will always be loonies, a lot of them, in a country of 320 million people, and political movements should not be judged solely by their violent outliers. That's fair. And yet when every conservative speaker on campus is an excuse to riot, when every Trump rally is a chance to assault someone wearing a Make America Great Again hat, when your party's elder stateswoman is famous for celebrating racial violence during the LA riots, as Maxine Waters is, it's no longer a matter of outliers. It's something very different. What's a bigger sign of danger in America? One body-slamming politician knocking a journalist down? That's bad. Or this? We've even seen it on this show, on the set. Last week, we had a progressive activist called Kevin Zeese, and his only objection to violence in a long conversation, his only objection to violence in politics is that it might be ineffective. Watch this. Is that a legitimate tactic to smash windows?
That's not an effective tactic.
Is it legitimate? Morally legitimate?
That's up to the people who organize it.
So it's okay. There are times when using violence
I've
in
never
America.
Used violence. We've never advocated
I'm
violence.
I'm asking a philosophical question.
And I'm saying I can't answer every question when violence is appropriate or not.
Yeah. By not answering, he answered. You get it. A few days before that, Monique Pressley did not have a problem with Maxine Waters defending rioters in L.A. who nearly killed a truck driver only because of his skin color. She did not denounce the attack. On the contrary, she all but endorsed the attack. That puts her outside the pale. Endorsing violence is that's the line, and she crossed it.
Right. Well, I don't know if we'd have our current president if that was the line. She has a right to say what she thinks.
Political parties exist to conduct politics, which is supposed to be conflict without bloodshed. That's the whole point. The moment those parties embrace violence, not just committing it, but also excusing it, condoning it, fantasizing about it. They are no longer political organizations. They're awfully close to militias. And the rest of us are definitely much closer to the breakdown of everything we cherish in this country. Violence is the bright line, and they're very close to crossing it.
They've crossed it. They've already crossed it, obviously. And the fact of the matter is many, many people on the left believe any level of resistance, including rioting, including violence, is justified in getting rid of Trump because he's a new Hitler. And, you know, it's tremendously sad. I don't know what else to say. It's shocking, you know. 6:32, we'll come back and get into this more, the history of violence and leftism. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. 6:33. You got your local news coming up.
Coming in out of the rain and hear the jazz go down.
All right, so what we're talking about, violence and politics, shots fired at a truck flying the Make America Great Again flag, Starbucks staff harassing Trump-supporting customers, Time Warner CEO defense funding assassination play, Peggy Noonan rage all the rage and it's very dangerous, a list of violence against conservatives. All right, so I would say, you know, the movement that wants to get rid of free speech, violence against freedom, is the same movement that wants to shut people down, drag people out of office, and will engage in violence if necessary to achieve their goal, is a little bit from Hollywood elites cheering for anti-Trump violence. February 1st, 2017.
We will hunt monsters, and when we are at a loss amidst the hypocrisy and the casual violence of certain individuals and institutions, we will punch some people in the face when they seek to destroy the least and the disenfranchised and the marginalized.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Good day.
Well, that was from the Emmys, but the entire place is going crazy. You know, it's a lot of times you see this type of thing where individuals are fomenting a certain thing, and in this case, political violence, which would be the foundation for civil war. And it seems like these people either don't know how dangerous it is what they're doing, or they don't really care. But here is a little bit from America Under Siege, Civil War 2017. This is from Capital Research Center, January 19th, 2017. From Cohesion Films.
There have been considerable protests today.
And they don't have any belief in law or justice or right and wrong.
How everyone is calling for a peaceful transition.
Lenin said, we must speak in a language.
Not all these Trump idiotas. And they set it on fire.
Hate and derision towards those with whom we disagree.
Thousands of people are in the streets tonight, pretty spontaneously.
And sucker punched, his clothes torn off his back.
The strategy was to create chaos. Lenin said, we must speak in a language which brings hate and derision towards those with whom we disagree.
the ultimate goal of those people is to usurp power. I mean, when you think about, you know, everybody knows the term useful idiots. You demonize the opposition. You make Donald Trump. He's even worse. And so that's where they came up with racism, sexism, xenophobia, all these things.
Why do you think the reaction to President Trump has been so absolutely over the top? Why do they just seem to be so obsessed with bringing him down?
Well, for one thing, he's very sure of himself. And unlike previous squishy Republican presidents, Donald Trump doesn't back down. Like, he digs in for a fight, and he's not, you know, he doesn't let anybody walk all over him.
After they were told this couldn't happen, he couldn't win, Hillary was going to win in a landslide, they had kind of a nervous breakdown. They became unhinged.
The mainstream media tells us that these riots and acts of violence are completely unorganized, defined as spontaneous in nature. But is that really the truth?
Seeing these demonstrations are understandable. I don't think there's any evidence they're caused by professional protesters.
You don't just make a spontaneous protest where 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 people show up with a specific agenda in mind. You don't create things like that. That comes through organization.
My name is Trevor Loudon. I'm an activist, author, and documentary filmmaker from Christchurch, New Zealand. I have dedicated my life to researching radicals and terrorists. These people are threatening your freedom. Why does that matter to me? Because if your country goes down, so does mine. The unrest on your streets poses a much deeper threat than many Americans realize. As part of my research, I spoke to investigative journalist James O'Keefe.
What we found was this nexus of activity where these operatives would tell us how they would hire mentally ill people to go out and disrupt these protests.
We have mentally ill people, we pay. Do shit, make them a bitch.
These Trump people, they would go into these protests and they would try to induce violence. Get a response. And if you watch these videos we produced, it's disturbing. The candor and the degree to which they brag about doing this. This guy's name was Scott Fovel. He worked for a nonprofit organization in Wisconsin. And he says, quote, the Clinton campaign pays the DNC. The DNC pays this group Democracy Partners, which is a consulting firm. And Democracy Partners pays the Fovel group. This is Scott Fovel, this individual. And they go out and they execute the expletive on the ground.
The campaign pays DNC. DNC pays Democracy Partners. Democracy Partners pays the Fogel Group. The Fogel Group goes and executes the shit on the ground.
And this guy at the top, Bob Creamer was his name, an old friend of Barack Obama, community organizer. This guy at the top was involved in all of it. In fact, he went to the White House some 300 times, met with the president 47 times. And he was forced to resign his post as connected to the Clinton campaign as a result of these videos.
You uncovered the Fovel operation. Do you think there are other similar operations going?
Absolutely. In fact, right now, we do have some people. I think you guys went into one of these J20 groups. We have people who are inside the boot camp, which was the planning session for the inauguration on the 14th and 15th of January, and exposing all the different techniques and tactics. Some of these things are blatantly illegal. And some of them are violent. Most of them are just illegal.
All right, so let's take a little break here. You got some weather coming up for you. None of this stuff happens in a vacuum. 523-1450 and 805-6180. Kelly O'Connell, a little weather. We'll be right back.
Competition, get on the plate. But the horns, they blowing that sound. Way on down south.
All right, here's a little bit on Jordan Peterson, by Jordan Peterson, on the mind of a social justice warrior.
In Men Peaking at 14, it reminded me of something you said. I think it was Joe Rogan talking about SJWs and kind of and how they create their own chaos, talking about how adolescents have this drive to change the world. And I was wondering if those three, the criminality, creativity, drive to change the world, are linked, and if so, if they manifest differently in men and women, and if they kind of come from the same area.
Well, I think they are linked, but I'm going to concentrate more on the second part of your question. So I'm going to ask you guys to think about something. So I talked to a friend of mine the other day. He's a very, very smart guy, and we've been talking about, well, all the sorts of things that we've been talking about tonight for a long time. And we were talking about the relative evolutionary roles of men and women. This is speculative, obviously. And because our research did indicate, it's tentative research so far, that the SJW sort of equality above all else philosophy is more prevalent among women. It's predicted by the personality factors that are more common among women. So agreeableness and high negative emotion, primarily agreeableness. But in addition, it's also predicted by being female. And that's interesting because in most of the personality research that I've done, and as far as I know in the literature in more broadly speaking, most of the time you can get rid of the attitudinal differences between men and women, or at least reduce them by controlling for personality. So if you take a feminine man and a masculine woman, then, the poles reverse. But that didn't seem to be the case with political correctness. And so I've been thinking about that a lot because, well, men are bailing out of the humanities like mad and pretty much out of the universities except for STEM. The women are moving in like mad. And they're also moving into the political sphere like mad. And this is new, right? We've never had this happen before, and we do not know what the significance of it is. It's only 50 years old. And so we were thinking about this. And so I don't know what you think about this proposition, but imagine that historically speaking, it's something like women were responsible for distribution and men were responsible for production, something like that. And maybe that's only the case really in the tight confines of the immediate family, but that doesn't matter because that's most of the evolutionary landscape for human beings anyways. What the women did was make sure that everybody got enough. Okay, and that seems to me to be one of the things that's driving, at least in part, the SJW demand for equity and equality. It's like, let's make sure everybody has enough.
All right, so I got a little interpretation on this. When feminism came in, it displaced men from the role as the head of the family and the head of society. And so women began to come across in the family and in society as general. In the university system now, in politics and corporations. And so women displacing men, but bringing their own values in, because women are more interested in egalitarianism, partly because of feminism, and partly probably because women need to be fighting for egalitarianism so their children can survive, all the children can be fed and clothed and everything. So just a guess, but I mean, I think that a lot of what's going on in society now is a result of feminism, and it's like what he's saying here. It's unique. We've never seen anything like it before. And I think that it brings a lot of confusion and dissatisfaction with it, because men and women are inherently different in how they see the world, how they experience the world. Even if, say, a man and a woman can do the same task equally well, all things being equal, whether that's true or not in all cases, it is not true that men and women they inhabit the same place. Women have a female view, men have a masculine view, and to destroy that means that people no longer have an identity. That's my take on this.
Look, fair enough. You can't argue with that. But there's an antipathy between that and the reality of differential productivity, because people really do differ in their productivity. So, all right, so to answer your question fully, I do think that the rebellious tendency of adolescence is associated both with that criminality spike, especially among men, and with creativity. Yes. I think that the SJW phenomena is different, and I think it is associated, at least in part, with the rise of women to political power. And we don't know what women are like when they have political power, because they've never had it. I mean, there's been queens, obviously, and that sort of thing. There's been female authority figures, and females have wielded far more power historically than feminists generally like to admit. But this is a different thing. We don't know what a truly female political philosophy would be like, but it might be, especially if it's not been well examined and it isn't very sophisticated conceptually. It could easily be, well, let's make sure things are distributed equally. Well, yeah, but sorry, that's just not gonna fly.
Do you think in terms of the West with the SJWs, and you talked about last lecture as well, creating chaos when there is none, otherwise it'd be static. Do you think there would be any validity in saying that in a country like Canada where we're pretty gender equal, is there any merit to thinking SJWs are trying to create chaos?
Social justice warriors, these are these snowflakes that are the most offended by Trump.
And when there arguably is none on a mass level, obviously there's still problems.
Why would they do that?
Otherwise, it would be static, and that drive.
Well, that's
well, what she's getting at is if you create unrest, and this is going back to Marx's theory, the end result of unrest is a chance for the different levels of society to be shaken out, and for there to be a revolution. We'll take a little break here. Come back. Here's a little Gaffigan Cinco from the album Cinco, I'm a Man.
3-year-old didn't get me a birthday present this year. Yeah, and I've known him for a couple of years. So I'm not talking to him. Presents are interesting. I don't really need or want anything. I mean, my life is pretty chaotic. I have 5 kids, you know, and I have friends that love stuff. I have a friend who has a drawer of watches. I have another friend who has 5 cars. Whenever I'm with these people, I realize I'm just simple. All I need is a nice bed and a private jet. Yeah? Now, I have the bed. All I need is the jet. And it could be a used jet. I'm not a snob, you know? I mean, I don't want a prop plane. I'm not trash. Just a regular old private jet to take a regular old guy to a regular old private island away from his kids. Yeah? I'm just salt of the earth. I'm an everyman. Ridiculous. This year has flown by. I don't want to brag, but I've kept my New Year's resolution. I've done it. I've had pasta every day this year. Thank you. I tell you, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. There were some nights when I was like, oh my gosh, it's 11:30. I haven't eaten pasta. I have to wake my wife up and have her make me some. Yeah. But I do it because it's about personal accountability. By the way, if you believe I would wake my wife up, you're drunk, all right? Because I'm afraid of her, all right? But I like being married to a strong woman. I do. And I'm sure there are other men in the audience looking at their wives like, honey, do you want me to clap? Or yeah. Do you like what he's saying? Because I'm on your side. I just don't want to talk about it later on. I do like being married to a strong, decisive woman. But you know what? I'm in charge of the remote control. That's where I draw the line, all right? I'm in charge of the remote because I'm the man, all right? I mean, she picks all the shows we watch, but I get to hold the remote. Because that's the kind of puppet dictator that I am. Being in charge of the remote control is a no-win situation anyway. The person you're watching with is never satisfied. They're like, turn it up, I can't hear it. Then you turn it up and the commercial comes on. Turn it down, what's wrong with your hearing? I'm always in trouble. When we watch television, stop crinkling that back. Once I got in trouble for sneezing. Why would you do that? I think it's involuntary. Well, now I didn't hear what that guy said. All right, I'll rewind it. Oh, now it's starting the whole episode over. Here, you should be in charge of the remote. I'm going to go back to hiding in the bathroom. Because I'm a man.
All right, how about this? The reason the reaction against Trump has been so furious and so sustained, in addition to these other things, is because he is an alpha male, and the left has devoted itself for the last 50 years to totally destroying the idea of patriarchal society. They are moving or trying to move us into a matriarchy, leadership by women. Just a Theory 659. We'll be back.
Check out Guitar George. He knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't want to make it cry or sing. This man and old guitar is all he can afford. When he gets up under the light, to play his thing. And Harry doesn't mind if he doesn't make the scene. He's got a day time job.
So this is Good Morning, and we've been talking about violence and the leftism, how the left has entered a new stage, a new phase by trying to assassinate members of the GOP House and Senate. Now, this is from the City Journal. In incitement to violence, the left has raised America's political temperature to the boiling point. Democrats may be horrified by today's attempted massacre of the GOP House baseball team by an avowed progressive, a leftist, but their incendiary demands for massive resistance since November have been an open plea for the escalation of words into violent action. The daily repetition that President Trump is an illegitimate usurper who stole the election through collusion with foreign powers has been a hypnotic incantation in search of an Oswald, a siren call for an assassin. All right, I'm going to play for you now. We're going to move on a little bit to world Marxism. Conflict theory, how conflict works within Marxism to bring a higher level of order, a better world, so to speak.
Society that focuses on the inequalities of different groups in a society. It is based on the ideas of Karl Marx from the 19th century, who believed a society evolved through several stages, the most important of which were feudalism, capitalism, and finally socialism. 19th century Europe was a capitalist society, where the rich upper class, called the bourgeoisie, were a minority of the population, and the poor lower class, called the proletariat, were the majority. Now, you might think that the majority would have more sway over the society, but it was actually the bourgeoisie that had the power. They owned the factories that produced everything people needed, and they sold what they produced to earn a living. The proletariat only had their labor to sell to make a living, and they were dependent on the factory owners to get paid. But this wasn't just a one-sided dependence. The factory owners were also dependent on the workers to work in the factories, though they would never admit it because they would lose some of their power. There was a significant economic inequality between the factory owners and the workers. It was this economic inequality that Marx believed would fuel a change in society. As the working class realized they were being exploited, they would unite to create a class consciousness. This class consciousness is kind of like getting everyone on the same wavelength so they can be stronger and overthrow the capitalist status quo. Marx created a model which proposed that a society where one group exploited another group economically would actually contain the seeds of its own destruction. The existing generally accepted state, or thesis, of a society would cause the formation of a reaction, or antithesis, that opposed the accepted state. In a capitalist society, the accepted thesis was that the bourgeoisie ran the factories while the working class provided the labor. The desire of the working class to change the way things were was the antithesis. The thesis and antithesis can't exist together peacefully. One side is quite happy with the status quo and wants to leave things the way they are. The other side is looking for change because they really aren't so happy with the current state of things. The struggle between the two sides would eventually lead to a compromise, or a synthesis of the two, resolving the tension between them by creating a new state. Perhaps the synthesis here is that members of the working class begin to take on managerial positions. The few workers who become managers might create a new middle class that has even more power than the factory owners themselves. This synthesis of thesis and antithesis would eventually become a new thesis in its own right. And
all right, so this is a little bit hard to follow, but the bourgeoisie are the owners, the proletariat are factory workers. Marxism is born during the time of the Industrial Revolution, when there are these massive differences between the wealthy and the poor. Now, society is a lot more equitable. And I was just thinking about this as I'm listening. Jeff Bezos, second wealthiest guy in America. How did he get his money? He started a company called Amazon 20 or 30 years ago, right? He had nothing. The guy literally had nothing. And now, so it shows you the reward for discipline and taking risks in the system, in the capitalist system that we have. People can still make it. And the idea that the government has to create wealth or has to redistribute wealth is nonsense. All right, here is the bloody revolution is the method shown to the communists by Lenin. Lenin is the guy that took the writing of Marx and came up with a theory how to apply it. Marx did not have a way to apply his theories. Check this out.
Revolution is the method shown by the communists.
Hold on just a second. You want to hear the beginning of this.
The bloody revolution is the method shown by the communists, by Lenin. Turning streets into war zones, attacking the security forces and public assets, resorting to acts of provocation to instigate clashes, and imposing revolution by, according to his own mind, inciting fear and concern in people, are the methods shown by the Russian revolutionary Vladimir Lenin and deliberately applied by communists.
But one of the chief targets for leftism to attack are the police. Why is that? If you have a societal disintegration, it has to come through removal of the police, delegitimization of the police, or just a vicious attack on the police. So the police become more distracted and more concerned with their own survival. And as we saw during Black Lives Matter, we have a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell's show. Who's this? Hey, Aaron, how you doing? Hope you're well. What's on your mind?
Two things. I think one thing that socialism does, and where you've seen it in Venezuela, is that it simply replaces one bourgeoisie with another. It takes a political class, those in power, and they go ahead and get rich and live a really high lifestyle, while the worker and everybody else deteriorates. The second thing, the only thing standing in their way, and this is one reason they want it so badly, is they want to take our guns away so they could just steamroll us.
Yeah, that's so good.
That's all I got.
Thanks, Aaron. Have a good day. All right, so my response to that is that, all right, so you have to understand that Marxism isn't just a theory of life and politics. It is a map for taking the world over. And almost every group that I've ever studied of the last, say, 100 years, 150 years, that has fomented for revolution used a Marxist model. For example, the people in Ireland that were the, IRA, Irish Republican Army, even though they were freedom fighters trying to get their own homeland back, that's what they said, they were really Marxists. And they did a lot of diabolical things. So here is for you. Communist terrorism, Lenin and Stalin. Lenin leads the revolution, but he doesn't really. He leaves the country. Somebody else starts the revolution and takes the country over. And then Lenin, who's an extremely shrewd and cunning person, came back and took out the head of that revolution and put himself in that place. A lot of people don't know that. And then Lenin dies. His brain becomes ossified. The brain turns to stone, believe it or not. And when they cut him open and They touched his brain because they wanted to preserve his brain as being the greatest, most brilliant person in history. His brain was hard, and if you tapped on it with a metallic instrument, it would ring out. So it may have been the result of syphilis. So here is, then Stalin takes over, who's even crazier than Lenin, who changed his name to Stalin, which means steel. What a macho man, you know? Here we go.
Communism, after all, was not Nazism. It was about equality and harmony. There was nothing wrong with the idea itself. Well, actually, there was. There was something which made it different from the other utopias. Lenin believed in what he called the war of classes, which meant that the ultimate harmony can only be reached after certain groups of people are killed.
Initially, when communists come to power, and that doesn't matter where, let it be in Russia, in Poland, in Cuba, in Nicaragua, it doesn't matter, in China, initially they destroy about 10% of the population. And that's very specific. This is used not just to kill enemies, they're not enemies, it's to restructure the fabric of society. It's a social engineering. Top intellectuals, best workers, best engineers, they would kill them all. And then they will try to restructure the new society.
Hang at least 100 kulaks, execute the hostages, do it in such a way that people for hundreds of miles around will see and tremble.
That is the war against the peasant farmers, the kulaks, which created the largest political famine in history, and I believe 5 million kulaks were starved to death. They were told to give all their food, all the food they grew, to the government, then the government would give them back what they needed. Crazy idea, huh? For subsistence farmers. These people starved to death. If the government came along, they would even examine the feces of these people to see if there was any grain in it. If there was, they'd kill them.
Lenin. In 1917, the communists seized power. Lenin now had a chance to apply Marxism to real life.
Those who resisted were shot. There were terrible massacres against resisting peasants. And again, nobody knows exactly how many people died, but we're talking about 10 million or more.
But even the most ruthless terror could not break popular resistance, particularly in the ethnic republics, where communist terror was entwined with national oppression, as it was in Ukraine. On September the 11th, 1932, Stalin wrote to his associate, Kaganovich, "The situation in Ukraine is very bad. If we don't take steps now, we may lose Ukraine." Several meetings of Stalin's inner circle resulted in a plan of action. It was an horrific plan.
In that winter, 32 to 33, all food supplies in the Ukraine were taken away. A huge cordon was created so that nobody could leave.
Initially, people didn't die. Leftover supplies of grain and vegetables kept them alive. But this was not part of Stalin's plan.
So he ordered NKVD to confiscate all grain, all food from these areas. By doing that, he knew he's condemning them to death.
Soviet society was the first communist society on Earth. It was a huge social experiment. The agonizing death of 7 million Ukrainians had a wider meaning in the distorted vision of the communist architects.
You have to make the revolution, then establish the dictator, dictatorship of proletariat, and then the birth of the new man can be possible.
The birth of the new man was the ultimate aim of Marxism. breeding a new evolutionary form of human being who will think, look, and act differently. But communists were not alone in this endeavor.
Wir müssen eine neue Menschen erziehen und einen neuen Lebensart zu führen.
Hitler's National Socialism was also about creating a new man.
So you need to create a new man, a new woman, because human beings are... there is no such thing as a... There's no such thing as human nature. And so you can breed people and you can train them to do anything you want. And if they don't do it, you can always kill them. Back 721 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1458-05-6180.
He can play the honky tonk like anything. Saving it up Friday night.
Okay, so why does communism, which is the seed, it's the root, it's the taproot of the left today, there's nothing to take its place, why does communism fixate on terror, on violence? Well, one of the reasons was the Bolsheviks, which meant the majority party, was a teeny tiny party in Russia. It was 20% of 1% of the, I mean, it's just minuscule. So they felt like they had to gain control of the country. They had to release terror. But from another perspective, and this is why you don't want religion removed from a country, there was no argument against killing people. People were not made in the image of God. There was no God. There was no Ten Commandments. The only thing was the revolution, was the party, was politics. You must remember, in leftism, there's only what Hillary Clinton called in her paper that was written about Saul Alinsky, her graduating thesis, there is only the fight. Think about that. Communism's indispensable instinct, terror.
Communism's indispensable instinct, terror. Anarchy and terror are indispensable tools for Marxism and communism. Marx and Engels, the founders of communism, personally advocated violence and terror. Terror became an inseparable part of the communist ideology with Lenin, who put Marx's theory into practice. The words of Lenin make that very clear. In principle, we have never rejected and cannot reject terror. When people charge us with harshness, we wonder how they can forget the rudiments of Marxism. Rivers of blood were spilled in Russia, China, Korea, Burma, and Cuba because of their communist ideologies. Millions lost their lives, and many more were crippled. In the 20th century alone, 120 million people, men, women, children, the young, even babies and toddlers, lost their lives because of this cold, harsh, and savage ideology known as communism. And these are just the official figures. The real numbers of those who died from communist depression are much higher. Even those who survived lived in a constant state of fear because the communist ideology regarded terror as an indispensable tool and obliged its followers to commit to it. For example, this is how Lenin taught his communist comrades the need to commit acts of terror against the military and the police. 1, by leading the mass. 2, by attacking, whenever a favorable opportunity presents itself, policemen, and seizing their arms. 3, by rescuing the arrested or injured when there are only a few police about. 4, by getting onto the roofs or upper stories of houses, etc., and showering stones or pouring boiling water on the troops, etc. To launch attacks under favorable circumstances is not only every revolutionary's right, but his plain duty. The killing of spies, policemen, gendarmes,
the blowing up of police stations, the liberation of prisoners, the seizure of government funds for the needs of the uprising. Every detachment of the Revolutionary Army must be ready to start such operations at a moment's notice.
Notice there's no functional difference between that and the call for jihad.
The propagandists must supply each group with brief and simple recipes for making bombs. Squads must at once begin military training by launching operations immediately at once. Some may at once undertake to kill a spy or blow up a police station, others to raid a bank to confiscate funds for the insurrection.
All right, you get the story there. Now here is from FBI agent Larry Grothwell. Now, the number one influence on Barack Obama after he went to university was Bill Ayers, who was involved in the Weather Underground. Now, you think that these ideas were left in Europe during the 1800s, right? Early 1900s, mid-1900s. That is false. Larry Grothwell talks about how this group of people, the main influence on Barack Obama, Bill Ayers, had a plan to kill up to 25 million Americans because they wouldn't go along with communism. This is only a few decades ago. And this is coming on in just a second. This guy's an interview. And so Larry Grothwell was inside the organization and pretended to be a member while working for the FBI to keep track of
him. I brought up the subject of what's going to happen after we take over the government. We become responsible then for administrating, 250 million people. And there was no answers. No one had given any thought to economics. How are you going to clothe and feed these people? The only thing that I could get was that they expected that the Cubans and the North Vietnamese and the Chinese and the Russians would all want to occupy different portions of the United States. They also believed that their immediate responsibility would be to protect against what they called the counter-revolution. And they felt that this counter-revolution could best be guarded against by creating and establishing re-education centers in the Southwest. Where we would take all the people who needed to be re-educated into the new way of thinking and teach them how things were going to be. I ask, well, what is going to happen to those people that we can't re-educate, that are die-hard capitalists? And the reply was that they'd have to be eliminated. And when I pursued this further, they estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill 25 million people. I want you to imagine sitting in a room with 25 people, most of which have graduate degrees from Columbia and other well-known educational centers, and hear them figuring out the logistics for the elimination of 25 million people. And they were dead serious.
All right, so just a little bit more on that. But what you have to understand is that these communists believe in a tyranny of the proletariat. That means leadership and the vanguard of the proletariat creates the tyranny of the proletariat. The vanguard is university-trained individuals. When that guy called up last week or a couple weeks ago, Tim, and he verified this, it's still in the thoughts of communists. Leadership by university-educated people, because communism is a philosophical system. You have to be trained into it. And then it's leadership by these intellectual people. It's what we have today, isn't it? In the media, in the university systems. People that are educated into imbecility and want to save the country by destroying it and having a revolution. Don't forget, Marx said the number one most important thing in history is the revolution. The revolution is an engine for change. 732 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, 805, 6180 to text. We'll be back. Local news.
With the Sultan.
Here's one last clip, Stalin purging enemies and friends alike. What you find in communism, because it's an illogical, anti-factual socialism, anti-factual. There's never been a successful socialist country in the world. Countries that move into socialism fail economically. There's also an irrational, crazy element in Marxism. These people, they hate religion. They want to destroy religion because they don't want to answer to anybody. They don't want these antiquated rules. Then they end up living under one person's tyranny, murderous, terroristic tyranny. And it's 1,000,000,000 times worse than what they got rid of. The devil you know is better than the devil that you don't know. Or the God you know is better than the God you don't know. Check this out. Stalin purging enemies.
In January 1934, Joseph Stalin summons the supreme decision-making body of the Soviet Union, the Party Congress. One of those summoned is his loyal supporter, Sergei Kirov. Kirov thinks he is the closest thing Stalin has to a friend. The general secretary himself gives Kirov the choice position of Leningrad party boss. But now the paranoid leader believes Kirov has become too popular among the party delegates. Popular enough that he can one day become a rival or betray the revolution like Malinovsky. On December 1st, 1934, Sergei Kirov walks into his office in Leningrad. At the time, his death is an outrage and a mystery. What no one realizes is that Kirov's murder is part of Stalin's master plan. The party leader decides to seize the opportunity and get rid of all his old rivals at once.
The best way to do it is a purge. And the best way to do that is to demonstrate that his arch enemies were responsible for the beloved Kirov's death.
He begins by arresting Lenin's old deputy, Lev Kamenev, and his supporters. He accuses them of being traitors and of conspiring to murder Kirov. To make the absurd accusations credible, Stalin needs a confession. Kamenev and other top party leaders are taken from prison to the Kremlin, where he makes them an offer they cannot refuse.
If you accept your fate and say what the party requires of you, then I can guarantee that your family will not suffer. Now, is it worth your family suffering? And of course, being committed to their families, they back off.
With their confessions in the bag, Stalin puts Kamenev and 15 other senior party members on trial. Foreign press are invited to view the proceedings.
They attended the show trials and they expressed pleasure. The system was so perfect that the accused voluntarily confessed and they were listened to and treated very humanely.
Stalin's plan works perfectly. His old rival Kamenev and the other alleged conspirators are shot.
So anyway, it breeds paranoia. It's all of the power, the undiluted power. And problem with Marxism is ultimately that there it's not a system that was worked out through history, like the how the West gave rise to democracy and republicanism. Marxism is built out of a factory of malcontents and rebels, and it is really satanic in its essence. We have a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Jim.
Hey, Jim. Good morning. Hope you're well. What's on your mind?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. The left and the feminist movement, they hate Donald Trump because he's an alpha male.
Yeah.
And why would the Russians or Putin want an alpha male represented in the White House? They would want somebody weak and go along with their, globalism, like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, well, they've already it's come out, Jim, that Trump wasn't involved with the Russians. That Comey admitted that. So where do they go from here? You know.
Right. It's just going to be something else, and they're going to go if they get Trump, they're going to go after Mike Pence. They're not going to stop.
Yeah, there's no stop. Man, people don't understand. You can't. It's like trying to make, make a truce with cancer. You can't do it.
Well, Rush Limbaugh's been talking 30 years. I never understood this feminism thing, where they've castrated the American male.
Right.
Have you noticed the white teenage boys are not as scruffy or gritty as they were when I noticed when I was 50
yeah.
years old?
Yeah, sure.
Very feminine nowadays. I mean, boys were scruffy, and back in the 50s and 60s, they were men. They were manly. They just, you got to let your kids go outside and experience life. You can't put them in bubble wrap. They're all snowflakes.
Well,
snowflakes now.
Yeah, you've got this movement within the media, within Hollywood, to produce all of these sitcoms in which the men were all weak and were abused by the wife and the kids and everything. And just to put a distaste for fatherhood and male leadership in people's mouths over generations, you know, it's all related. I mean, these people are all leftists, you know?
Yeah, well, they certainly are. And it was just such a difference in this country back. Remember shows like The Rifleman?
Yeah.
There were shows, Ben Cartwright, The Rifleman, even Fred McMurray, My Three Sons. The man of the house, there was no wife. So the mother had died. The man was raising the children.
Yeah.
I mean, they put this thing around. Twisting of what's good for the country, this anti-American thing. We've got to expose it, and we got to put a stop to it.
Well, if in feminism you take away the role of the man and you put the woman into an unfamiliar role and everybody's unhappy. So, yeah, and it is sad because and Jim Sheridan, who's the producer, the guy that produced the director of the movie In the Name of the Father, which is a great movie, with Daniel Day-Lewis, said if you want to destroy the society, destroy the father, because somebody in the culture has to be a leader and take responsibility and sacrifice. And leadership by women alone leads to unparalleled levels of poverty and danger for these kids. Got to go. I got to do a break. Thanks for the call. Good call. All right, folks, we'll take a little break here and be right back. Got some local weather for you. 523-1450.
And a crowd of young boys there fooling around in the corner.
Best brown baggies in their platform. Trump now at 50% approval. I think people are getting sick of the bullying. I honestly do. I think what he's doing is turning Trump into basically making him sympathetic, because it's so excessive, it's over the top. And every one of these guys, this guy Mueller, he is supposed to be so, these people are always brought up as the quintessence of rectitude, you know, and this guy's going after Trump harder than anybody. And Trump tried to give him the job of the FBI director. It's all very entertaining. Here's Sean Hannity on the viciousness of the left.
To target, attack, delegitimize, dehumanize the president pretty much on a daily basis. Take a look.
This executive order was mean-spirited and un-American.
Republican
Chuck Schumer crying about a bill.
And leaders and President Trump don't give a about the people they were trying to hurt.
I will fight every day until he is impeached. Impeached 45. Impeached 45.
This is a bunch of scumbags. That's what they are.
Those are very strong words.
Organized around making money.
We've seen nothing that we can work. I can work with President Bush on it. I'm trying really hard to find something positive. This morning he had 3 tweets. I was thinking he was more of a creature that stalked the night, that these things just came out at night like a vampire, and that he tweeted these things. But now it's spread to the morning.
What a nitwit.
This is beyond psychotic, unhinged, and we've been telling you night after night right here on this program.
This is from yesterday. This is where this violence comes from. You have these nitwit political leaders who are stirring up the base, and they don't care. I'm sure some of these people were happy that somebody pulled a rifle out to prove that Trump is so horrible, people have to move to violence to try to stop him.
Democrats, the left, the destroyed Trump media, you know what? They hate this president. They will do now say anything to delegitimize and destroy him. Now, for months, they have been trying to outdo one another. You know, one black helicopter, tinfoil hat conspiracy theory after another for months and months and months, night after night, launching new and venomous attacks. And after yesterday's shooting, the liberal Huffington Post, they had to take down a disgusting article that actually called for President Trump's execution. Take a look at the headline. Impeachment is no longer enough. Donald Trump must face justice. And here's the subheadline. Impeachment, removal from office are only the first steps for America to be redeemed. Donald Trump must be prosecuted for treason if convicted, and a court of law executed. Really? Pretty disturbing. And by the way, if there wasn't a left-wing assassination attempt yesterday, probably that story would still be up tonight. Then, of course, the New York Times smearing former Governor Sarah Palin in an op-ed blaming her for the 2011 shooting of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. Palin had nothing whatsoever to do with what happened, which is why the New York Times had to issue a correction. And earlier today, Palin tweeted that she is talking to an attorney and exploring legal options, which, by the way, she should be doing. Do it, Governor Palin. That's my advice. And by the way, here's this thing about all of this. Everything we have showed you is it's less than 1/10 of 1/1,000,000% of the divisive, hateful rhetoric that is now the left in America. We can spend an entire week just playing tapes, just showing example after example. The problem we're now facing is that no one on the left has the courage, or very few, or the fortitude to speak out and stop the hatred. And that's because Democrats use this kind of vile rhetoric every single election. Every election, what? Republicans are racist, they're sexist, they're misogynist. Let's see, they want dirty air and water, they want to throw Granny off the cliff. And that's just part of their political playbook, Islamophobic, xenophobic, you know, homophobic. It never ends. The left objectifies Republicans, especially conservatives, into something we are not. And they know the truth, but yet they contribute to this atmosphere where Republicans, we're not even human. If you're conservative like me, God, awful. How do you even speak on television or radio? Now, tonight, I know there's a...
All right, so here's some of your texts. Another great show. Do you think millennials might be drawn to the Benedict option, Lydia? I don't know. I'm not thinking so myself. Well, who knows? Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connor's show. Who's this?
Hey, JR.
Hey, JR, what's going on? Hope you're well. What's on your mind?
I listened to the program over the past few days, you know, and what's our options? What are our solutions to fixing this?
Wow, that's a great question. Yeah, I don't think these people are going to stop, so I think you have to beat them politically. Trump has to survive this purge, and the GOP has to gather, has to circle their wagons and start acting as one. I mean, Trump's legitimately elected. The GOP has nothing to gain by allowing him to get picked off.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, well, thank you, Kelly.
Thanks, Chair. Bye-bye. All right, so here is another one. Just glorious. Raccoons have better minds than you cons. Frankie, let's see here. President Trump is innocent. James Comey is guilty. He's a Russian mole. That's why he panicked when he got around Trump. Trump is outing them. It's disturbing that Comey was at Lockheed Martin. And here's another one. I love alpha males. I'm an alpha woman, and I love the competition. There you go. That's the attitude to have. All right, I've got a little clip here from this deranged comedian, Andy Erickson, who's female. Check this out.
I have a pickup line I want to share with you guys. I made it up. It's never worked. It goes like this. You go, hey, girl, you look like a crying baby. Because I'd like to hit that. If you're not laughing, you don't hit babies. Okay, I have another pickup line. Here's a pickup line you can use on girls that have scoliosis. Okay. Go like this. You go, hey, you look like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, girl. Even more than you already are. I can say that joke because I have scoliosis. I know, it's fine. But it's just, you don't really need a pickup line to get a girl with scoliosis. So. You're like, hey, what's up? You're like, all right. All right, cool. I know. Whatever, I don't care. It's fun. But I remember going, because I've had scoliosis, you know, my whole life, forever. I had some surge to get rid of it, but it's cool, surge. But, but when I was in school, I had to wear a back brace, and okay, I cried a lot. But I told my mom, I was like, the kids at school are making fun of me because I have to wear a back brace. And she was like, oh, they're just jealous. Yeah. They wish they had a cool place to put magnets. Well, yeah, Mom, I'm as cool as a fridge. I love that. Are you a mom? Okay, because when I started, I said, the kids at school are just, she finished the word jealous for me. Do you use that on your kids, too? They're like, oh, man, the kids hate my haircut. Oh, they're jealous. I know, they are. They're so jealous. No, I'm just kidding. It's a good. You should tell your kids that everyone's jealous of them. Like, yeah, everyone wants to be poor and weird.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. And my voice is a little shot today, so I thought we'd do some more clips and understand in the history of leftism, it's rage. It is anger. It is a need to overpower your opponents. And even if that means, well, it could mean taking away their free speech, getting them fired for their jobs for not being politically correct or kicked out of society. But sometimes for some of these people, it even means violence. It's very scary, but we got to stand up to them. Anyway, have a great day. Thanks for tuning in. Have a nice weekend. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. Ciao.
They don't give a damn about any trumpet playing band. It ain't what they call rock and roll. And the Sultans.
Yeah, the Sultans, they play Creole.